right? We got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that, all right? Let's go. Break it. Break it, let it cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Springer on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, what's going on? Welcome in to another edition of Rock Chalk Sports Talk. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, along with Daniel Courtright. I'm Nick Springer. A short show today on RCST is we're going to be out pretty early here at 3:50, around 3:50, for pregame coverage of high school baseball on our airways here on KLWN. It'll be Free State at home taking on Shawnee Mission East with Joel Becker and Tyler Bermundo on the call. That's coming up at 3:50 today. And more baseball will be coming your way tonight with KU. It is their Negro Leagues baseball game coming up tonight at 6 o'clock with Gus Balow on the call of that here on KLWN on the Jayhawk Sports Network. They'll be taking on Nebraska coming up tonight. Kansas on a four-game losing streak, by the way. Nebraska is a top 25 team or a French top 25 team, so it should be an exciting game tonight at Hoagland Ballpark and some great weather for it. Today's some nice weather for baseball, and we'll have two baseball games coming your way with Free State at the high school level and KU coming up later on tonight. RCST, as always, is brought to you by 23rd Street Brewery. And on the short show today, as we only got about a little less than an hour here on the show, we'll get into the national title game coming up. And then later on this hour, before we get out for the high school baseball coverage, I'll get to some Lance Leipold audio. He spoke with the media earlier today. We'll get to everything he had to say coming up later on this hour. But off the top here, national championship game last night for basketball, Purdue and UConn. And kind of what I thought might happen did happen, which is that UConn, they're just a steamroller. I don't know how else to describe them. They're unstoppable.
Yeah, and do you think you can make the case that this might be – I mean, this is probably a top five team of all time. Did you see the point differential? The point differential was 140 for the entire tournament.
Yeah,
that's insane to me. And then plus going back-to-back, that's very, very hard. Calipari – or no, I'm sorry, not Calipari. My mind's
about,
on Calipari.
Yeah, we were just talking about Calipari.
Krzyzewski and then Billy Donovan were the last two guys to do it. I mean, I think you can make the case that this is one of the greatest college basketball teams of all time.
Yeah, Danny Hurley obviously did a great job, and it's so annoying because he's not a very likable guy, if we're being honest.
No.
Like, he's not a very likable guy at all.
He's pushing guys, yelling at Zach Edey.
But he's obviously done a great job of building UConn. And UConn... Now, since 1999, they have six national championships. They've been very, very impressive. They've been so good. Like you said, they've been dominant through the NCAA tournament. And kind of the one thing that I was hoping for throughout the tournament was I just wanted to see UConn be in a close game just to see what they would do. And it just never happened. You know, I think Danny Hurley had this quote earlier in the year in which he said, we're bad in close games, so we're just not going to play close games. Well, that's exactly what they did. They didn't play a single close game. I mean, even this one against Purdue, they get up by 18 with like 4 minutes left. And there was just no chance. They're an unstoppable machine. Incredible.
Yeah, they're inevitable too. I mean, we were talking about this just before the show. They have six national titles, all from 1999 till now. They only have seven Final Fours. That's unbelievable. I mean, they're inevitable. If they make the national championship, like you said, they're 6-0 in national championship games. That is truly an unbelievable feat that I've never seen before.
Yeah, and things in this game kind of played out the same way that they played out for UConn-Alabama, actually, in the Final Four, where early on, it felt like, going back to the Alabama game, it felt like Alabama was playing pretty well. They were hitting a lot of threes. They were like 8 of 11 from three. They were playing at a high level. And you look up at the scoreboard, and they're down four. And kind of the same thing happened at Purdue, where early in the game, for about the first 10 minutes, Zach Edey, it felt like he was dominating. I mean, it felt like he was really getting what he wanted. He had like 14 points to start the game. He looked really good. And then, again, you look up at the scoreboard and Purdue's down five. And it just doesn't make any sense because it didn't even look like UConn was really playing that well. Edey was dominating, and yet somehow they were still out in front. And then in the second half, things spiraled. Edey really cooled off. He couldn't get anything going. UConn started doing a good job of taking him out of the game. And Purdue didn't have anybody to hit any shots from the outside. and things just kind of went from there. So, yeah, UConn, I don't really know what else is more to be said about that team of how great they are. You know, you think about last year's team, and this was mentioned, I think, last night as well on the broadcast, is that when you look at some of the teams previously that have repeated as national champs, you think back to, like, Florida with Joakim Noah and Billy Donovan, you think back to, you know, even beyond that, what those teams had in common is that generally they brought the entire team back.
Yeah.
That's not the case for this UConn team. They did not bring the entire team back. They lost some guys to the NBA draft. They had some transfers. They brought in a freshman at Stephon Castle. This was a team that had some new pieces to it compared to last year, and yet still they just absolutely just ran through everybody they saw. It's pretty remarkable.
Yeah, and I think the most important thing about UConn is they seemed so poised. They were never rattled through the entire game. Like you said, Edie was going crazy in the first 12 minutes. I think he had 14 in the first 12 minutes, 14 minutes, whatever.
Yeah.
And then you just saw the way that UConn reacted to it just was nothing. They were just like, all right, let's go back down. Let's see if we can answer it. Well, later in the game, it seemed like Purdue was getting rattled by UConn, and UConn definitely ran away with it. Edie was getting cold. I think there was 11 minutes of game clock where Edie did not score, which is insane to me because he ended up with 37 points. But yeah, I think UConn was just a much more poised team. They seemed not rattled whatsoever. And yeah, there's just, I should have known that going into the game that was going to happen.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I got the sense that this was probably going to happen. I mean, I kind of called it back, even going back to the Sweet 16. And again, it's not even like it's a bold take or a hot take to be like, well, I think UConn might do well. Oh, you think? They've been the number one team for a long time. So it wasn't even like it was really that bold of an assumption to think that they were just going to steamroll everybody. But, you know, with the NCAA tournament, you don't see it usually at this level that we've seen with UConn. And you think back to, like, okay, hey, we're going to get Purdue and UConn in the national title game, two of the best teams in the country. Well, as it turns out, even still, there's a big gap between what Purdue and UConn were. And honestly, with Purdue, you start to realize, man, they really were just a guy who's 7'4", surrounded by a bunch of average to crappy guards.
Yeah, I have a fun hypothetical for you, Nick. I think
okay. I like hypotheticals.
It's happened before with Hakeem Olajuwon in 1983 against NC State, where the team that lost the national championship, they had a player who won the most outstanding player. Could you make a case for Zach Edey here? He had 37 in the national championship game. He played outstanding the entire Final Four. I mean, is there that conversation?
Yeah, I think the problem you run into is that Purdue got blown out by UConn. I mean, I think if this ends up being a closer game where Purdue, it's like back and forth and Purdue's right there and Edie's making some plays down the stretch and that leads them to like maybe being a closer game with UConn, that's probably the case you could make. But, I mean, listen, Edie goes out against NC State and scored 20 and 12 and was pretty dominant as well in that game. But, yeah, I think that the problem is, like I said, Purdue got ran out of the gym.
Yeah.
If it's a closer game against UConn, I think maybe it's possible. But the problem is with how dominant UConn has been throughout the entire tournament and even into the Final Four, right? They pull away from Alabama. They're like a boa constrictor. They could just constrict you until you're dead.
Yeah.
And the same thing they did to Purdue. It's hard to not pick somebody from UConn when you see how great they've been.
Well, UConn, they're so evenly spread out as well. I was watching the game last night, and I was like, man, who is even going to win the most outstanding player? Because I know Tristan Newton had 20, but in the Final Four game against Alabama, he didn't play as well. I mean, you know, there's a case that you couldn't give it to him. So I don't know. The way that UConn plays, they're so spread out. Everybody is just the perfect role player in that team for them to be able to be set up for success. So I'm not saying I wanted Zach Edey to win the most outstanding player, but I'm saying, is there a conversation? And I don't know. I think that you're probably right with the score.
If it's a closer game against UConn, I think maybe you have a discussion about it. But again, just the way that they absolutely steamrolled.
Yeah.
But I mean, to your point, you know, you go back to the game against Alabama, and Bama's strategy was leave Castle open, and he ends up scoring 21. Whereas in this game against Purdue, it was more Tristan Newton who ends up with 20 points in the game, and he ends up hitting a couple threes. He was good at the free throw line also. So, yeah, I mean, I think you probably could have picked anybody on UConn, and I think it would have been a fine answer. You know, Cam Spencer is a guy that, while he doesn't jump out on the stat sheet, he was phenomenal, I think, especially down the stretch for UConn. He had a great game overall for them. And that's really the other thing is, like, UConn wasn't even really shooting the ball well from three in either games against Alabama or against Purdue. I guess they shot 40% from three against Alabama, but in this game against Purdue, they were just 6 of 22. That's KU numbers. KU was shooting 6 of 22 most games.
But Purdue only went 1 for 5.
Yeah,
that's insane.
I think Purdue, in a lot of ways, when they started to panic, they just decided we're just going to keep going to Edie and live and die by Edie, right?
Yeah.
And I guess they died.
That's what Edie. You have to do when you have a guy like that. But I don't know. I don't know if you know this, but 3 points is worth more than two. So try shooting threes, maybe, if you're down.
Well,
I don't know.
Only if you can hit the threes.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, listen, KU is a prime example of it doesn't do any good to shoot a lot of threes if you can't make any threes.
Well, Purdue, I think they averaged like 8.4 threes made per game. And they're not terrible.
Lawyer, I think, was close to 50% shooter from three in the tournament. So it's not like they didn't have shooters. But they just, like, to your point, I think earlier, they got kind of rattled. So when you start thinking about the discussion of Blue Bloods, certainly UConn is now in that discussion. They've got 6 national titles. That's more than some of the teams we consider Blue Bloods now. They are definitely there. I think some people with Jay Wright and Villanova wanted to put Villanova in that conversation. But now I think people have realized it wasn't so much Villanova, it was Jay Wright.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas with UConn, they do have that success with previous coaches, along with Dan Hurley, to where it's like, okay, this is a UConn program that's certainly in that conversation with what they've done over the past basically 25 years now, 26 years. They deserve to be in that conversation. And, I think for some people, they will try to gatekeep the term blue blood and be like, well, you got to have the basketball history. You got to be a Kansas. You got to be UCLA. You got to be an Indiana. You got to be a Duke, a North Carolina. I mean, the success speaks for itself. If you are dominating in college basketball for 25 years where you've won 6 national titles and you win when you get to the national title game, I think you're there.
Yeah, the craziest number to me is that all of them have come since 1999. So, like, they have been dominant for this short period of time. Yeah, maybe, obviously, they didn't win any prior to that, and that's when KU won, in 52 and 88, and obviously, with James Naismith and all the great history at Kansas. Yeah, obviously KU is a blue blood in that sense. But if you look at basketball as a whole, not just men's, I mean, you could make the case that UConn is the blue blood. I mean, in terms of what Gino Auriemma has done with their women's program.
Oh, for sure, yeah. And obviously they were in the Final Four, too, on the women's side.
Yeah.
Or I guess not the Final Four. They were in the Final Four. Against Iowa. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a great point with how dominant they've been overall. Do you care at all about One Shining Moment? Are you a big One Shining Moment guy?
I watch it. It's cool. It's fun. I mean, did you see KU's?
KU was on there.
They were in it.
KU was on there getting dunked on by Gonzaga. Yeah, no, that's been unfortunate.
I know there's a bunch of guys who are like all about it. They're like, oh, what's going to happen? They like make notes. They make drinking games out of what's going to be on where.
One Shining Moment for this year for me didn't really hit the same for me because One Shining Moment, it's better based off of how many upsets there are, I think.
Yeah.
And because you really only had, like, Oakland as being a real team that had a big upset. I guess Yale, fine, sure, whatever, Yale. Those boys lost to Kansas, though.
That's true.
Stupid nerds. But anyways, I don't know. I just feel like the One Shining Moment, to me, how much I care about it is dependent upon how many upsets there were. Like, if there's a lot of upsets and cool stories, then it's like, okay, sick. I'm going to see all that cool stuff. But this year, well, and also, what drives me insane is TBS, they have to know this, they intentionally continue to delay it every single year.
Oh, I know.
It's like, dude, Ernie Johnson, you're my guy. I like you.
Let's wrap
it. But please shut up so I can see One Shining Moment and go to bed.
Right. Yeah, no, I'm the same way. Yeah, wrap it up. I want it, like, once One Shining Moment ended and that Hyundai commercial came on, I turned off the TV and I went to bed. I was like, let's get this show on the road. And yeah, but I agree with you. I mean, since, weirdly enough, the tournament was pretty chalky overall. And, yeah, they had, like, Jack Golke, obviously, hitting a three and then, like, pulling the arrow back. That was fun. But, I'm not crazy about it. I think it's cool. It's a fun tradition. But, there are guys who are all over it, and they think it's the greatest thing ever.
I think it's fine.
Yeah, it's okay.
I don't have beef with it. Like, I'm not anti-One Shining Moment.
But. Yeah, same. Yeah, I like it. Keep it going. Sure.
Yeah, no, like I said, I think some years...
I'm going to let people enjoy things, though. So, yeah.
Some years it's better than others. This year it was kind of whatever. So.
Yeah.
But that puts a bow on the college basketball season. So it's kind of crazy to think about. I know Sean was talking about this on the show yesterday, but yeah, when from the KU perspective, you know, when KU gets bounced early, it's kind of like a, oh man, this thing just drags on forever. Like, let's just get to the off season. And so we are, by the way, from a recruiting standpoint, it's a dead period right now in the transfer portal. So no, there's no real news. KU is planning to have their basketball banquet, their sort of end of season banquet coming up on Thursday. So there's a possibility maybe we might learn more about the future of KU's roster coming up on after that on Friday or whatnot, or we'll see kind of if anything comes of that. But yeah, college basketball is in the books for this season. For Kansas, certainly probably a season to forget. You know, you end up with your most losses under Bill Self, most losses in Big 12 play under Bill Self. You get bounced early in the NCAA tournament. But like we talked about, you know, you go back to 2021, similar situation. Kansas goes and gets railroaded against USC, and they run it back and win a national title. So who knows? We'll start to get hype. I've already seen some people put out way too early top 25s, and there seems to be a lot of respect for Kansas. I think Jeff Goodman's Field of 68 had KU number two in their early top 25 or number one.
I saw one that had him at number one.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, that's cool. I mean, I guess, you know, we had this conversation last year before with Derek on the show about, generally speaking, the preseason number one overall team ends up being a team that is very successful and goes and makes a deep run in the NCAA tournament, with one exception. That's Kansas.
Yeah.
Past couple times, Kansas has been preseason number one. It hasn't worked out for them. So take that as you will, I guess. But
well, wasn't North Carolina preseason number one not too long ago? And
yeah, they ended up missing the tournament.
Yeah, they ended up missing the tournament, yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah, well, they ended up choosing not to go to the NIT.
Right, right, right.
Because they're too proud for the NIT. They're too proud for it. Yeah, so college basketball, that's in the books for it. Of course, we'll be talking more about college basketball, more with KU basketball, more with the transfer portal, and plenty more over the course of the rest of the spring as well here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Also, as KU football's spring practices wrap up, we're getting closer and closer to the spring showcase. That'll be coming up on Friday, which you'll be able to hear that coverage of the spring showcase. It'll be at Rock Chalk Park this year because of the construction at the stadium. You'll be able to hear that right here on KLWN, coverage of that coming up on Friday night. Lance Leipold had a chance to speak with the media one more time before the spring showcase earlier in the day today. We're going to be getting to that audio coming up on the other side here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. We are going to be out early here at about 3:50 for pregame coverage and then coverage of high school baseball with Free State with Joel Becker and Tyler Babundo on the call. Later on tonight, also, we'll have KU baseball. So it's a doubleheader of baseball at the high school level and the college level coming up on KLWN throughout this afternoon and this evening. But we'll get to Lance Leipold coming up on the other side. You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Depend on it.
Hey, it's Nick Springer from Rock Chalk Sports Talk on KLWN. And despite sitting in a studio all day, my body feels great thanks to Massage Envy. Their total body stretch services can help you stay loose and limber and clear your mind and help your body. Their total body stretch services are completely customizable. All you have to do is sit back, relax, and breathe deep while they help you through the guided stretches. So if you've been dealing with aches and pains, be sure to check out Massage Envy on 6th Street in Lawrence and 119th and Black Bob in Olathe.
Almost half past three here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk. You're listening on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. We're out early on the show today. Coming up in about 20 minutes, or less than 20 minutes from right now, by 15 minutes from right now, we'll get to pregame coverage of Free State baseball coming up here on KLWN at 4 o'clock for first pitch. And then we'll have more baseball coming up tonight here on KLWN with KU baseball. So we'll be switching straight over to KU baseball at 6 against Nebraska for the Negro Leagues Baseball Museum. I know Bob Kedrick, the president, is going to be at the game tonight for KU. They're going to be wearing some fun uniforms, taking on Nebraska coming up tonight at 6 o'clock. KU spring ball continues to move march on. They are closer and closer to the start of their spring showcase coming up on Friday night. You'll have coverage of that right here on KLWN. And Lance Leipold had a chance to speak with the media again here at the set earlier today. We got some more audio from some players as well that we'll get to throughout the rest of this week here on Rock Chalk Sports Talk, and then more probably into next week even as well. But here's everything that head coach Lance Leipold had to say when speaking with the media earlier today.
Lance, what's the best thing you guys have gained or achieved so far this spring now that it's kind of nearing its end?
You know, I think, you know, we've made some subtle changes on both sides of the ball. We're getting our newer players acclimated to what we're doing. I don't know if there's one consistent thing that we've continued to to improve on. I think there's been a lot. I think we have a long way to go yet in some things. But I think the best thing, I think this group is highly coachable and wanting to get better and has gone about it in a way, an approach that we really like.
On the flip side of that, just what do you continue to be most concerned about or feel you need to?
I'm always concerned about something. We got to stay healthy. Just our consistency in life situations, retention of information. But I've learned finally after 17 years of being a head coach that to really try to balance what's happening in the spring by matchups, who's in. You know, we lose a lot of guys early during the week to go to class. Matchup, sometimes it's, you know, one side looks good. It might be because, and then the other side is struggling, but it could be based on some matchups of experience. So all those things are kind of you keep it in, you balance, you take a look. But I can say each and every time we talk about it as a staff, our coaches are seeing improvement in certain areas. But there are some things. I think we have to find the right five up front in the offensive line. They're going to work well together and give us a chance to do the things that we want to do. And depth that linebacker continues to get better. And then our defensive end position, I think guys are going to show the ability to contribute there as well.
You mentioned staying healthy. Do you have an update on Deshaun Hanukkah?
Yeah, Deshaun will be out for the rest of the spring with a leg injury. And he had surgery, and that's about as far as I'd like to go right now with that.
Who are you looking for then, just for the rest of spring, then to step up and take some of those reps that he was getting?
Well, again, Jared Casey and Trevor Cardell have played a lot of football here, so we're going to rely on them. Quentin Conley is a guy that that'll get some more work. Tabita Noah is a guy that's been in the program, and he'll get some of those reps. Dylan Munn's a true freshman walk-on, but he's been slowed down by injury. But then sometimes you get into personnel groupings and things that will continue to utilize our receiver core and others in those ways.
Lance, you mentioned the pass rusher. I think it was Panagos that said the other day, you know, we asked that a couple years ago and Lonnie stepped up. We asked him last year and Austin stepped up. Is there a comfort in that hey, this is kind of a system that can produce guys if they get the chance?
Yeah, I think at that position it's been a comfort, and who knows? I think Dean Miller's had a very good spring. Dylan Brooks has had a very good spring. Dak Brinkley, for early enrollee, continues to get better each and every day. And I think we have others in that recruiting class that we'll be anxious to see. So, again, we have emerged. I would say... I don't know where Austin's going to get drafted, but they keep saying it could be in the first couple of days, and I don't think we stood here last year at this time thinking that would have been the case. So we know we've got some things to get answered, but I'm very confident someone will rise to the occasion.
You mentioned the improved depth at linebacker. Mm-hmm. What have you seen from Logan Brantley this spring?
Yeah, again, Logan's a young man who's got a ton of energy. He plays fast. And he's a physical linebacker. I think he'll give us more physicality there than maybe we had. For him, it's a matter of consistency. And he understands that, and he's very coachable, taking the highs and the lows and kind of balancing those out. But he's willing to run around, and we can do some things with him that I think are going to give us a chance to keep a regular package on the field and still be able to do different things.
Lance, you lose Nowitzki. He's been a mainstay there. What's it look like at center?
Yeah, Shane Baumgartner, I think, continues to get better and more comfortable in this system. Our way of practicing everything, I think that's been probably the physicality of practice might be slightly different, let alone the pace of what we do. So, really excited to, see him finish this up, but also see what he does in August. But Mike Ford has shown, more consistent improvement at center than even he was doing before when forced to play it. So, again, that gives us the movable pieces to put the best five out there. And I think we'll continue to get to that point. And, I think that's it's a common thing in college football today is to make sure you can get to eight-plus guys that can help you when injuries occur, and I think we'll be there.
If Ford moves to center, what do you like about the guards?
Yeah, Darryl Simmons is a guy that continues to learn as well. Kobe Baines, I think, has been very consistent this spring. You know, obviously Calvin's out for the rest of spring, but you know, we're going to have some other pieces I think that we'll experiment with and continue to mix and match. DK Stearns has been out this week for a family emergency. He should be back today. And Nolan Gorsica, I think, is really Nolan's probably a guy, John, that really has kind of been taking great leaps and bounds, really since the Cincinnati game last year when he finally got his first extended playing time. I think it's really helped his confidence. He played some tackle in that game, but he's playing better at guard than he ever has before, too. Again, that'll help us at that position, whether it be inside or out.
I saw there's another Leipold now coaching.
Yeah, you know, as best we did to tell her what that's like sometimes. But, you know, Kelly and I are awful proud of our daughter, Lindsay. And, of course, we love her dearly. And she talked about it. She'd had a job in athletic administration. And, you know, I knew it might be trending when she said to me, "Dad, I really miss being part of a team." And we'll see where it goes. Unfortunately, it's in the fall sport, and I don't get a chance to see it a lot. But again, it's the beginning, and she's getting it on the ground floor.
Hey, from minute one when you got here, it was obviously culture build was a big part of this. Mm-hmm. You've clearly done a lot of work in that area. A lot of that's here, right, in the facility, around the practice field. How much do you talk to your guys about culture away from you and away from your coaching staff, and just, you know, off campus and when they're at their dorms and together and things like that?
Well, you know, we try to emphasize it all the time. You know, you hold your breath in a lot of different ways. But, you know, it's refreshing, man, when you hear, you know, when you hear somebody, you know, when you get a note or an email for somebody's actions in the community, in the classroom. You know, we've talked about it before that I think one of the reasons we've been able to make the strides that we've had is the accountability in everything that they do, from classroom and attendance, take care of their business, act right, giving back to our community. And we've talked about it, and we always say, when you say about culture, culture's action, and it's how you do and how you proceed and how you go about it. And just like anything we do, we always can get better, but I think we do try to keep that at the forefront as well.
What have you seen from the early enrollees, freshmen?
You know, it's been exciting to watch them continue to grow and get better. And I think that'd be an even a better question about 10 days in the camp, too, because I think that's when you're really going to see the difference between them and the summer arrivals, because of what they've learned, the confidence of what they've had to go through. But Isaiah Marshall, again, so poised. And what he does. Harry Stewart continues to show up each and every day. I said Dak Brinkley continues to get better. Jalen Todd really started fast, and he's limited. He's not cleared for tackle situations right now. So that's kind of been we'll see how that goes, but we're excited about his future as well. So I know I keep forgetting others. I'm happy with it. I think it's something we're going to continue to see in college football, whether good, bad, or indifferent, because it's not just about football. It's about mentally and moving away from home and all those things. And honestly, that's the next big piece of it as they get ready for what the fall will be like.
We talked to Coach Daniels about Javier Garrett a little bit. Just mm-hmm. What have you seen from him during spring ball?
You know, again, early, I think the pace and some things what we do was a little shocking, maybe, and just hard to get the feel for, because things aren't really happening fast. But I've really continued to see him get better as well, and understand. You know, that's a position that you're going to rotate during the game and stay fresh. And I think he's definitely going to be able to help us.
Would you say there's a competition at center, or are you just experimenting?
I think there's a competition, but it's not just at center. It's center and guard, I think, for us. I think there's competition in the offensive line. You know, again, not to be satisfied or comfortable, because whether it be with the guards or, I did it with Scott. I used to do it with Daryl before even Scott at our last stops. Somewhere in fall camp, Daryl and I will go in his office and close the door, and I'll start asking questions about, okay, who's the first five? How do you see the next, and I think our guys understand is that take the position you want, whichever one. If that starter gets hurt but his backup if you list your guys 1 through 10 is the 10th best at the moment, is that the guy that you go out on the field? Or do you have movable pieces that takes number 6 and puts him at his natural position and one of those starters moves out, things like that. So I think wherever we're at, that competition for the best depth possible is what we'll strive for, always have, and I think we'll get there.
What are you looking to see on Friday night at the spring showcase?
You know, you want it to be sharp. You know, I thought our last game, I think we've turned the ball over a little more than we want to at this. Last week, a lot sloppier in penalties, so we need to be cleaner. I want to see us tackle well. And I want to see us execute in such a way on both sides of the ball that you feel good. Now, we're still going to have 2 more practices. You know, we picked this day for the showcase, but that, as I told the team, we're still going to maximize our 2 other practices with regular practices. So I want to see us take another step, get in front of people, and sometimes it'll be the first time some of them have been in front of a crowd, or a crowd of, hopefully it'll be a nice crowd, and they'll see what they can do, so-called under pressure. And most importantly, I want to come out of it healthy.
Is there any bonus to playing at that place? You know, you're going to have to get used to playing somewhere else when the season rolls around too.
Yeah, I think anything. I think I've said this. I could not be more proud how this team has handled the inconveniences in which they're operating right now, which shows they can persevere through a lot. And as long as you don't make it a big deal. They've handled it. We've practiced at 3 different locations, and they'll continue to do that because we are going to have to adapt in some ways, and hopefully that prepares us for some of those things. And, it was a nice, you know, we were out there last Saturday. I enjoyed being out there. And, we talk about a lot of things in our program from the administration, but to have coaches that will cooperate with us as well and allow us to kind of be in their facilities and things is it really says a lot, and we appreciate it.
All right, that was everything Lance Leipold had to say this morning when speaking with the media after another practice for KU football. A couple of interesting things there he said. It sounded like Deshaun Hanukkah may have suffered an injury on Saturday, and it seems as though Lance Leipold confirmed that. He'll be out for the rest of the spring. You wonder how much longer he might be out, if it's more of something where he could be out for an extended period of time, even going into like the fall and the season. And that could be a real bummer because he was a guy that it seemed like was playing at a really high level in the spring, and somebody who seemed like he could be slotting into that Mason Fairchild type role. Not to say that he would be that level of player, but you think about KU's tight end room and you have Jared Casey and Trevor Cardell, 2, you know, reliable players, but you lose Mason Fairchild, and it seemed like Hanukkah, maybe the transfer from Iowa State, was going to be a guy that could fill in there. He's going to be out for the spring, maybe longer, it would sound like. I think that could end up being a loss. It's kind of hard to call it a big loss just because you don't know what his production would have been going into the season, but certainly in terms of the depth of that tight end room, it's a big blow because now you look at the tight end room for Kansas and you've got Cardell and Casey, but after that, you've got Quentin Conley, a guy who was a preferred walk-on who has a big body but maybe is not quite fully built out physically. You have Jaden Hamm, a young guy who was a top recruit, committed to Arkansas, flips to KU as a redshirt freshman. What kind of role could he have? And maybe this is a position where KU looks to the transfer portal even in spring. Who knows?
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple of guys in the transfer portal who look interesting to me, like Corey Dykes from Maryland. He had a pretty great year this year. He had 104 yards against Towson, you know, in the first game of the year, but, you know,
fighting
sort of
Timberlakes.
Yeah, sort of went downhill from there, but, you know, maybe that is something that KU does. They look towards the transfer portal for just a little bit more depth at the tight end position. Not saying that Jared Casey and Trevor Cardell aren't outstanding, but Deshaun Hanukkah adding that wrinkle into it, sort of potentially being the replacement for Mason Fairchild. Plus, he's a hometown kid. He's from Topeka, coming back from Iowa State. I thought that was going to be a great fit. So hopefully he gets back for the fall.
Yeah, and I think when you look at the tight ends for Kansas, really the issue is Jared Casey has a very specific role, and he's probably not going to do much more beyond that role. Trevor Cardell, same thing, probably has a pretty specific role, and he may go above and beyond a little bit, but not so much. So I think there definitely is an opportunity there, and I thought it was interesting what Lance Leipold said about that. The other thing I wanted to point out there from what Lance Leipold said, a couple other points here. I thought the talk about Logan Brantley was very interesting. I've kind of maintained that the loss of Craig Young may end up being a little bit bigger than maybe we thought it was because it allowed Kansas to maintain some of their base packages, and that's exactly what Lance Leipold said there, is that with Logan Brantley, it sounds like they're hoping they can do a lot of that same thing with him in that role. I don't know if that means he could be a guy that ends up becoming a starter at that position, but I thought that was noteworthy, certainly, that he brought that up. And then with the offensive line, just what he said about that as well was interesting. You know, you lose Calvin Clements to an injury as well for spring, and it seems like he could be out for an extended period of time. Also, even going into, you know, fall camp in the summer. But you think about, you brought in Shane Bumgardner, a transfer from Tiffin University, which, by the way, we got a chance to speak with him as well. We'll probably get to that audio later on this week. And I think the general consensus was, okay, this guy was a D2 All-American. He's probably going to be your starting center. And that doesn't really seem to be the case. It seems like there is more of an open competition possibly for that center position. And then, of course, that could be a ripple effect into who ends up starting at the other positions around the offensive line. The one thing that does seem concrete is Bryce Cabledew is going to be your right tackle. And at this point, I would think Logan Brown is going to be your left tackle, considering there's no Calvin Clements for that battle at the tackle position. But the guards and the center seems to be sort of an open competition still.
Yeah, and you know, obviously with the departure of Nowitzki and Dom Pooney, that's going to be tough. That is something that has been sort of in the air. But yeah, with Shane Baumgartner coming in, I thought that was going to be amazing. But, you know, Leipold talked about a guy like Daryl Simmons, who's shown a lot of progress this spring.
Another Iowa State transfer.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, I think the offensive line continues to be a point of interest for me. I've kind of mentioned it. I think the offensive line and the defensive line, the trenches for Kansas, are maybe the two most intriguing position groups for KU because both sides have some pieces that have left and both sides have some uncertainty, but they brought in some guys on both sides as well that could make big impacts as well. So those are the positions I'll be keeping an eye on in the trenches. That's everything Lance Leipold had to say earlier today, and that's it for Rock Chalk Sports Talk today. We're done early today. A short show, short and sweet, straight to the point. That's what we like here on RCSD, as we're going to be out stepping aside for pregame coverage and then coverage of Free State Baseball coming up with Joel Becker and Tyler Bimundo out at Free State High School coming up at 4 o'clock first pitch. And then more baseball is coming your way tonight here on KLWN with KU. Kansas will be taking on Nebraska at Hoagland Ballpark, 6 o'clock first pitch with Gus Bailo on the call at the Jayhawk Radio, Jayhawk Sports Network. You'll be able to hear that game right here on KLWN as well. That's it for us here on RCSD. For Daniel Courtright, I'm Nick Springer. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out the rest of RCSD podcast if you miss anything from our discussion earlier on in the show. And thanks for listening. Same time, same place. We'll be back right here on FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN, 3-6 tomorrow. We'll talk to you then. High school baseball coming up next. See ya.
Well, that's it here on the podcast side here on the Best of RCSD podcast. Thanks so much for listening in. And, of course, if you do want to hear the full show, you can listen every day, 3-6, Monday through Friday for Rock Chalk Sports Talk, your only daily KU-centric sports radio show that you'll find every day from 3-6 on KLWN. Be sure to leave us a 5-star rating and review if you're listening on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. Thanks so much for listening to the Best of RCSD podcast presented by Massage Envy. You can also find us on kusports.com as well. Be sure to check out the live show every day from 3-6 on KLWN. Thanks for listening.